Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arcan, Andy Hart, you at 617-779-7937 as we continue to react to the Red Sox. Pulling up a chair to the big boy table, making a trade. Garrett Crochet joining the team. A quartet of prospects heading to Chicago. And for more on that, joining us right now, WEEI and Nesson, Red Sox broadcaster, and our good friend Lou Merlone joins the program. Lou, how we doing?
Oh, we're doing a lot better now. I'm not going to lie to you. Like I can feel like I can breathe again and kind of, okay, now I can sit back because it was getting pretty stressful there. They're trying to thread a needle. But ultimately, they got the guy that I wanted. Like, Garrett Crochet, as I said before, is a pig. Mm. He is filthy. He is young. And I think he's about to take off. We'll see if it's going to be here, hopefully.
Any reservation about the fact that he's only had one real full season pitching in the majors at 25 years old? Is that something that you took into consideration when you were going over the idea of trading for this guy?
No, not really, just because of his path. You know, he was drafted and he went right to the big leagues, and he was a reliever, you know, in 2021, and he had a pretty good year. So right away, he was, you know, got right taste of the big leagues and started using up this service time, and then missed 2 years because of Tommy John. So, you know, he was arbitration eligible with like 1 year in the big leagues, or even less, I guess you would say. So he is what he is, but in which, you know, the history of the injuries is the reason why last year was what it was in that second half. But I saw him in June. I watched his starts leading up to it. Going into June, mid-June, end of June, he was everything Scuba was. He just got shut down, basically.
Lou, I'm with you. I came in here today expecting to be all cranky and bitch about it. And all of a sudden, everything changed right before we went on the air, and I'm happy. So the only question I do have, and we always ask this about every big acquisition, playing at Fenway Park, playing in Boston. This is the guy we heard those rumblings, oh, I'm not going to be traded unless I get an extension. I won't pitch in the postseason. What's your understanding of kind of guy they're getting, kind of fit he'll be in the clubhouse and in Boston?
Yeah, I don't know the guy personally. I think a lot of that was completely overblown. You know, when you're a pitcher, when you're a player in the big leagues, you're your own company.
Yeah.
And this guy at 100 innings, July 3rd, and there was, if you go look at from that point on, he basically threw 3 or 4 innings the rest of the year. They kept him around 50 or 60 pitches because he had thrown 12 2/3 innings in 2 years. He had missed 2 years. He was so dominant, there was no way that this guy was going to throw 200 innings or 180. And if he was to be traded, and somebody actually thought that they could use him in October, which is why nobody traded him, because they knew it wasn't realistic, and as a starter, like, he's protecting himself. He's like, I just went through 2 years of Tommy John. And if you guys think you're going to roll me out there for the next 3 months and throw me 200 innings, I'm going to miss 2 more years of Tommy John. And the Garrett Crochet industry is not going to be doing very well. So he reacted, and I'm sure his agent reacted. And it was like, you want to blow me out? Give me an extension so I can sit home and make money. Other than that, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to throw 140, and then next year I'll be able to take off and go to 180 and end up getting paid someday.
So you don't think there will be any necessarily any limitations? I know he had 30-something starts, but the innings were low. You don't think they will have to be dealing with any limitations August, September next year?
No, I don't, because he gave you 145. And like I said, if you look at the game logs, everybody's talking about the second half. It was 3 innings, 4 innings, 56 pitches, every single start. They could have just shut him down, you know, and let him have like 5 more starts and then just shut him down at the deadline. But they wanted to keep him throwing. And I think, you know, there's a couple outings. I think the Red Sox actually got him late in the year, and somebody else got him. But there was a lot of 4 innings, 1 run, 8 strikeouts mixed in there as well. So it was controlled. You know, everybody kept talking about Houck and Crawford and inning totals. You know, they got to their 180. This guy got to 145, totally comfortable with 180, 185 next year, 90, whatever.
Lou, what do you consider Crochet's ceiling to be? All-star, MVP, Cy Young? Like, what are we talking about here?
Well, a Cy Young candidate. I mean, that's a ceiling. whether he gets there or not. I mean, he's got to stay healthy. I'm not saying this guy is an absolute lock. You know what I mean? There's risk with everybody. You know, not one pitcher doesn't have injury risk. But as far as ceiling goes, like, it's Blake Snell. You know, it's Tarik Skubal. And as dominant as he was last year, if you go look at his career, you know, the year before, he only had 80 innings and 15 starts. I don't think people would have the same questions last December if they had traded for some guy, like, you know, Tarik Skubal, who's only thrown for 3 years and he's been okay. But sometimes you got to just watch the guy throw, look at his stuff, look at some of the numbers, the swing and miss, and it's absolutely elite.
We're talking with Lou Maloney, Nesson WEEI Red Sox broadcast. Lou, prospect package that was sent to Chicago, reminiscent of the Chris Sale package. The Josh Beckett one is another one that sort of popped up there. Any reservations about moving on from Kyle Teal with the catcher position having some uncertainty here in this organization and some of the other guys? Would you consider that a overpay, regular pay, underpay, what?
Well, first off, I've already forgotten who they've given up because I only give a rat's ass about who plays in April of this year, not in April of 2027. You know, it's, I mean, you got enough of this. Like, start cashing them in, and they did it, I think, for the right guy. We'll see. They give up a lot. You're supposed to give up a lot because of the ceiling he has. Like, Kyle Teal, I don't think, is going to be the best player in this package. You know, the top four is tiered. It's Anthony and it's the other kid, Campbell. You know, Meyer, he's got to stay healthy. They still love him. But Teal was always, and I mean always, labeled a high-floor prospect. You know, he's not Adley Rutschman. You know what I mean? He's not Buster Posey. You know, is he the best pitching prospect they've had in a while? Yes, but that doesn't mean much because they haven't had much since Tech. So, to me, it's like he's a big leaguer. I just don't know if he's like an impact big leaguer. Brayden Montgomery, and we don't even know him yet. He could end up hurting more than the other guys, but you know, whatever. I don't care. I really don't. You kept your top three guys. You kept Abreu. You kept Casas. You kept Crawford. Like, you're trying to win right now. And those three guys that I mentioned, those prospects, can help you this year.
Do you think we'll be hearing about a contract extension or contract talks with Crochet anytime soon? Or they take the value they can get for a year and kick that can down the road a little bit?
Well, he's already in arbitration, right? So if he has the year that you hope he's having, that's going to jump year two, and then year three is going to be a big number. So yep. I don't see why you would wait around. I don't know him personally. I don't know his – I don't even know who his agent is. Some guys with the injury history that he has had probably would jump at an extension. He may be a guy that's just like, no, look around. I'm going to go for 2 years, and if you want me back here, you can bring me back here. So I don't know the answer to that. All I know is that you're a better ball club for the next couple of years, and then we'll go from there.
Garrett Crochet, CAA Sports is what it says on sporttrack.com. Okay, so Crochet now in place. Mm-hmm. Opening day starter is set. What's the next move?
Corbin Burns. I'm not done.
Wow, I like it.
No, but listen, I think is that a reach? Probably. I don't know. Just take, but they haven't spent money yet.
Right.
This guy's $2.9 million. Like, we always felt there would be a trade and a signing. So here's the thing, though. It allows me to breathe. Like, if they didn't bring in a guy like Crochet or that ilk, and they tried to sell you and Walker Buehler was the big guy, right? Mm-hmm. Or even Jack Flaherty. Maybe he isn't a one-year wonder. I don't know. I wouldn't trust that, though. You know what I mean? I'd be like, well, I still want to wait and see. But now that you got this guy in the fold, if you go get a high-upside Buehler, if you go get a Jack Flaherty, or if you dive into another guy that the computer spits out and says, yeah, we like him, I can live with that a little bit more, knowing that I got a high ceiling, a potential guy in Crochet. So I still want another starter. I want an adult in the bullpen, you know, a high leverage guy, kind of like Chris Martin role to go with Chapman and Hendricks, and probably that right-handed bat.
Do you have a preference on the right-handed bat? I know a lot of people, there's been a lot of Bregman talk, and I know Alex Cora talked him up nice. Some of us look at his numbers and say, huh, he kind of peaked 5 years ago.
Declining a bit. Yeah.
Getting a little older. The numbers are declining. Where would your preference be with the bat?
Well, I think, you know, I do like Teoscar, you know. It's funny because they keep denying this Devers move off of third, you know, to first and Casas. And maybe it doesn't play out because you're not dealing Casas now. Maybe you are. I don't know. But it's just strange because I know a lot of people over there like the Damas, you know, and they like Bregman. And they've had talks with Arenado. And they all play third. You know, I don't buy like the move, you know what I mean? Like, and I also understand why publicly they're going against it so strong of talking about Devers being moved off. You don't have that conversation with Rafi Devers in case you sign someone. You sign someone first, and then you have that conversation with Devers. So publicly, it's sort of like, you know, you never announce to the guy, listen, we're going to trade you. And he gets all flustered. He gets all pissed off. He hates everybody. And then 2 seconds later, you're like, you know what? It fell through. We'd love to have you back. You know, so there's no reason to talk to him about moving to third until you trade for Arenado or you sign Bregman, and then you have those discussions.
Speaking of discussions, in the Bregman reporting, it might have been Sean McAdam, I'm forgetting, but there was some talk of how there was sort of split within the organization, yeah. And one of the voices was Sam Kennedy.
Yeah.
Is Sam Kennedy a voice in baseball decisions right now?
Yeah, you know, he's the president, but it's funny because you don't look at him as like Larry Lucchino.
Right.
You know what I mean? And but he's still the president of the team. He's in all these meetings. He's given opinions, things like that. I thought it was, first off, the interesting part was the fact that it was just made public. Mm-hmm. I don't think the fact that a general manager and a manager or anybody in an organization disagrees on who to bring in. I think that's extremely common. We usually see it at the deadline. But you'd imagine in those rooms, there's no way. If a manager really wants a player or a GM doesn't like him, he wants someone else. And that happens all the time. The crazy thing with this one is that it actually got out, I think, more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Has ownership felt the heat this offseason, would you say, Lou? Because yeah. There was a lot of talk about, you know, it's the same crap we've been hearing. And they're going to be interested in all these guys. They're not going to do what it takes money-wise. We're talking free agents here, not so much trades. Not going to do what it takes to spend that yeah. kind of money. Would you say that the message is sort of broken through to John Henry and Warner and those guys and that they're feeling a need to react here?
Can I say we'll see?
Sure.
No, right? We do a radio show, Lou. You should know that.
No, and I totally understand. But it's like, yeah, they made the big trade that I want. They got a starting pitcher for 2.9 pre-arbitration. So it wasn't like, you know, they're sitting there, you know, the information about Fried, right? They were a year off, it seemed like. It's sort of like, why? Like, why? Why were you a year off? Like, you give 8 years. I don't see anybody in New York complaining about an overpayment for Max Fried. I see them just talking about Cole and Fried on top of that rotation, how much they love it. And that's going to be the same thing. You know, like, if you went out and gave Burns, like, 9, 280, and you jumped everybody else, no one's going to give a rat's ass how much you pay him when he is, like, a Cy Young candidate in your rotation. So, yeah, they made a nice trade, which is good. But you do want to see them go out in free agency and spend some money here now and really kind of put this team in a position where they can compete in a wide-open AL East.
They made this trade without altering the big league roster. And yep. There's been a lot of talk that somebody's got to go. Like, there might be a logjam at various. You mentioned Casas staying going, Yoshi staying going, the DH position, whatever. Mm-hmm. Who do you think needs to go? Forget who they should go after, but do you think there's a couple guys that just flat-out need to go?
I don't think they need to. You know what I mean? I don't think you need to ship anybody out. Like, okay. I've never felt like you needed to trade Casas. I always felt like his name came up because you were fishing in a different pond. Like, you know, when you start trading for guys with a year or two before arbitration, you know, you don't have to give up Casas. But if you swing and miss and all of a sudden now you're going after a guy with 4 or 5 years of control, like maybe what's going on down in Pittsburgh, if they make Jones or Bubba Chandler available, William Abreu ain't getting that deal done.
Right.
He's just not. You know what I mean? So then you got to include some guys. And that's the only thing. He's just a different level of player if you want to fish for that type of starting pitcher. So, but I would say Abreu, Casas, Yoshida, you know, are they still in play? I guess it still depends on what they're looking for. They already made one major trade.
That is the voice of Lou Maloney. You can hear him calling Red Sox games here at WEEI and on Nesson as well. Lou, thanks so much for the impromptu drop in here today. Always great to talk with you.
All right, guys. Have a good week.
All right, see ya, Happy Lou. Happy Lou. No longer Angry Lou or Angry Andy. We got Happy everybody.
Everybody's
here.
Happy. Even you.
Even Happy Arcand. Right. I mean, when do you ever never get to see that?
No, I've worked. How long are we doing this? 4 months?
Yeah, books almost there. 4 months.
I've never seen Happy Arcand.
Well, now you've seen him.
I kind of like Happy Arcand.
Yeah, Happy Arcand.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun.
It's not much to be happy about lately. Other than the Celtics, there hasn't been much to be happy about.
Did you watch those Bruins?
Today. Yes, I did watch the Bruins. We will talk about them a little bit later on in the show. But there is another piece of news that is developing. Andrew Callahan has some new reporting on it right now. Bill Belichick to North Carolina. We're certainly going to discuss that with Adam Schefter. We'll discuss it with you right after Dan Ball gets you caught up on what's trending. Bill Belichick on the Pat McAfee Show on Monday.
Very Craig Breslow-esque there, that
is. It was.
I believe they would have the opportunity if they had the ability to potentially do that.
Yeah.
Like, get the hell out of here, Bill.
It was a little Craig Breslow, a little OJ, if
very weird. Yeah. But guess what? Weird may be working.
Could be. Pete Dammel and who else? Chris Lowe at ESPN have published the following. They put this out about 45 minutes ago. North Carolina working to close a deal with Bill Belichick to make him the Tar Heels coach. But sources told ESPN there are still issues that both sides need to work through.
Hmm.
Sources added that the ball is in Bill Belichick's court. And that North Carolina officials are on board with him becoming the coach. A resolution is expected in the near future, sources say. Now, we remember our good friend Ollie Montgomery, who I'm 95% sure is a real person, but not 100%. 5% chance he's an AI bot. Either way, he reported that the trustees were a little wary about all this. The manifesto.
Yes, they should be.
The succession plan. Revamping the entire program and making it, you know, the NIL money, two separate staffs, a coaching staff, and then the front office staff and all this other stuff. I mean, it was a very ambitious plan, I'd say, that Belichick has, and not a cheap one either. It's ambitious, it's expensive, it's radically different from the way business has been done, not just at UNC, but I'd say in most college programs across the country. It's new. And that's part of what I like about it, honestly. I think it's cool that Belichick, even being the old stubborn mule that he is trying to adapt and create this sort of new system of doing things and wants to be at the forefront of it. Like, I think that that's, for him, pretty smart, honestly, I do.
Great minds think alike. There you go.
Exactly. However, it may be a little too much. Among the issues, writes Thamel and Chris Lowe, among the issues are the potential role for his son and current Washington defensive coordinator Stephen Belichick.
Feels like a big one.
North Carolina's name, image, and likeness resources, Belichick's salary, and resources for the staff and reporting structure. Now,
so everything.
The North Carolina name, image, and likeness resources? What is that?
That's the amount of money they're going to spend on the roster. The most important thing there. Like, Ohio State and Texas spent $24 million on their rosters this year. I'm guessing North Carolina spent half that, less than
probably,
half that.
Probably, yeah.
So Bill is asking for more money to be spent on the roster. He's asking boosters and everybody, the collectives, to come up with a boatload of money. His salary, the NIL expenditure, the salaries that all his people will make,
right,
and his son. Those seem like the four biggest issues, and those are all issues.
They are. I also think, and I've thought this kind of all along, the idea of Belichick going to even in the era of NIL, he didn't like having Kraft hanging over him, right?
No.
He didn't like having
confirm that.
Thank you, Bill. He didn't like having anybody sort of
this
looking over
work.
His shoulder. You think he's going to be cool with all these boosters and trustees and all the people who pulled the strings at a university athletic department? Like, that's worse than an a-hole billionaire. I'm not calling Kraft an a-hole, but that's probably what he thought about him. You know, that's what Bill thought. Oh, this guy's billionaire is breathing down my neck. You know, that type of thing. You're going to have 10 times that in a college program. Even one like UNC, it's not that big.
And you're not married.
Right.
Like, when he pisses off a booster, that guy can take $5 million and say, okay, you want to be a jackass? I'll take my $5 million from the NIL collective. You just lost
going
a quarterback
right back
and a
into
receiver.
My car dealership.
Right,
yeah, exactly.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, at least with Robert, they have the same end goal. Robert owns the team. Bill coaches the team. They're trying to win. Their egos will go up. Their bank accounts will go up. They're all in the same. A booster could pull at any moment.
Right.
And you think Bill is going to take the time to shake everybody's hand and to sign everything and to kiss babies?
And to schmooze.
And they're going to want that. It seems like he's trying to distance himself from that by having the whole GM position and do this. But he's still the face of the organization. They're still going to want FaceTime with Bill Belichick.
Right. He should hire like a schmoozer, right?
Yeah,
he should hire
can't.
Someone to just be the schmoozer. He's like
he will. I'm
it's
sure
like a
he
Bill
will.
Stan. Like, you should hire like Hillman. You know? Hillman would be great
at that.
He
should hire Fitzy's buddy from the Hernandez doc, the guy who played Bill. Have him just pretend to be Bill, see if anybody knows.
That's a great point, yeah. What was that
Broadway actor?
That guy had a funny name.
Very funny
name.
It's
like Seymour Butts or something.
Yeah,
right? Wasn't that his name?
It was a very strange name.
It's like a name that Bart would call the bar and say,
yes.
Like, is anybody here? Oh. I need a man to hug and kiss.
Or the young Red Sox pitcher, Richard Fitz.
Or Dick Fitz, yeah, something along those lines.
Is it Norbert Leo Butts?
Yes, nailed it. Norbert
That's
Leo
him.
Butts.
Hire him.
That's even funnier than Seymour Butts.
People are like, he arrives at some like booster club dinner and they're like, are we sure that's Belichick?
Yeah.
Doesn't really look like him. He's acting like him, I guess. No, I still think this is doomed to fail either before the documents are signed or afterwards. I already made a bet with Fitzy on the Six Rings podcast we recorded today. We're betting a case of beer on, I think Bill will have a losing record in his first year at North Carolina if he goes to North Carolina.
Yeah. UNC is putting pressure on Belichick now, right? Yeah. I mean, he came with these big, crazy demands, like unprecedented types of demands here. No one's ever asked for this sort of thing in a job interview. Forget about the money and the revamping the whole program and all of that. You have to install my son as the next head coach in waiting, which, by the way, let's say Bill is there for 2 years, and after the second year, they're like, I don't know about this. Like, do they have to hire Steve and then they can just fire him right away?
Well, no, there'd probably have to be like a buyout.
Some kind of buyout,
Knowing Bill's lawyers and the way Bill does these things, my guess is it would be a significant buyout. He wins deals like this. He controls things. He's a control freak. If they do this, they're getting in bed with the devil. It's not going to be an easy out for them.
Right.
They need to pray for it to work.
I wonder if this is their way of saying, hey, you know, Bill, you want to try and put the screws to us? We'd like to have you as the coach. There's no way we're doing all of this. We're going to say that we'd like to have you and we'd like to hire you and we'll bring you on as a coach and we'll do some of this stuff if you want. Not all of it. We'll do the here and there. We're not going to install your son as the coach in waiting. We're not going to have an entirely separate staff for you to run along with this GM and everything else. Like we'll do some of the things that you want, but we're not going to do all of it. Take it or leave it. And Bill's already basically said, here's my manifesto, take it or leave it. And I wonder if that's just going to force and a movable object.
If both sides say take it or leave it, it feels like we're leaving it.
Right.
Even though this feels like it's rolling towards coming together. I will say, I've taken a different view of something I said yesterday.
Oh.
Why would he do this when his best coaching buddy, Nick Saban, just got the hell out of Dodge for all of these reasons?
Right.
And I flipped it on its ear. Because Nick Saban has probably told him everything that sucked or was beginning to suck at Alabama. So Bill knows how to control those before he gets there. Mm. I'm wondering if part of this manifesto is based off of what Nick Saban said. I mean, I couldn't do this. I needed this. This was changing. I wonder if Nick Saban is a co-author, so to speak, of this binder that he handed North Carolina, the things he would have wanted.
Like an unwitting co-author.
Like he told him everything that sucked, and Bill's like, well, if he can't do those, I can't do those. So I got to make sure I don't have to face those challenges.
Yeah, it could certainly be something along those lines.
Thought.
I think that's very possible. I do. And I think that in general, I like the idea that Bill wasn't just sitting around, that he wasn't just dropping his rings on the table and saying, hire me because I'm Bill Belichick. He had a plan. There's a whole plan. There's this whole long plan. And maybe it's too much of a plan. Maybe it's just an unrealistic plan. But it's something. And I think that, to me, points to a guy that's serious about it. He's not just, I want to stay in coaching. I want my name to still be out there. I eventually want to make it back to the NFL and break Shula's record, whatever it is that he wants to do. I do think some of this is vanity, obviously. I mean, the Steven Belichick stuff is 100% just a vanity play. But in general, I think that there's motivation here on his part to try and do something different, to try and leave a mark in a different way. You know, like breaking the record would be great. But as you said, Andy Reid's probably going to come out and break it back. If he revolutionizes the way that college programs go about the NIL era here in college football, then that's a pretty serious legacy for him. Even if he doesn't have a great stint as the UNC head coach, like I don't think they're going to be competing for a national championship or anything, whether he's there or not. But if he's able to sort of rubber stamp something like that, that's a pretty big deal.
Absolutely. It puts him in a different class. And it's interesting to me that he maybe sees this as a better way to finalize his legacy than getting an NFL job or trying to get an NFL job, trying to win a Super Bowl without Brady, trying to build a contender, sees this maybe as a faster track of, well, you can buy a lot in college. Could I?
Right.
Could I fast track my college career here? And then you're comparing me to, Pete Carroll, Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
Forget there's probably a couple others, but the guys, it's a short list of guys that have won Super Bowls and college football national titles. And I think that
Harbaugh. Harbaugh hasn't won a Super Bowl yet.
He'll,
that's true.
I feel like he'll probably win
it's
one. Compete, at some point.
He's been in one, but yeah.
Let me ask you a question. This and it's based in your area of knowledge.
Oh,
so Deion,
I have an area of knowledge.
Well, Colorado football is one of them. Deion has that weird deal where supposedly like he and the president or the chancellor like sit. They're the only ones that know his deal. And
right.
They sit down and they.
It's kind of like Bill and Kraft's deal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Will we ever know what Bill Belichick is making at North Carolina? Or will he make part of this whole deal, Deion-like, where it's just him and one person knows the deal?
I'm sure he'd want that.
I don't know if you can when you have a board of chancellors or whatever this is called. It feels like if those people know, then they tell their wife, and their wife tells the, and all of a sudden.
Well, yeah, but we've, I mean, Dion, that didn't happen in Boulder, so.
But do they not have a board of, how did he get it so it's just the one guy who has knowledge
just
of his contract?
Just the athletic director? I don't know exactly. I couldn't tell you, but.
They were more desperate, maybe?
That could be.
Yeah.
I mean, they were 1-11.
Yeah. Like maybe UNC, they were more desperate.
UNC wasn't a bottom-of-the-barrel program.
Because I'm wondering what the figure Bill Belichick asked for to go to, is it, he was making $25 million.
Right.
That seems like a lot.
It does seem like a lot.
But maybe he goes, listen, my last job I made $25 million. I don't work for less than $25 million. Imagine if he got $25 million to go to North Carolina.
I know. I kind of doubt it.
Only in America.
I kind of doubt it. 617-779-7937. It's not a football school. That's why. If it was a big-time football school, then yeah, they'd consider that. I don't think UNC is going to consider
that. Yeah, but it doesn't matter. In the playoff era, if he can do what he thinks he can do, and he can buy a roster, and he thinks he can still coach, and he can bring in somebody to run the offense, it is very much feasible that they're in the playoff very quickly and vying for a national title. It's not the old days where you have to get into the top four playoff or the BCS game or anything like this. You don't think, you know, if he hits it the way he thinks he's going to hit it.
If he's as much of a draw as he thinks he's going to be?
Yeah.
Is he, though?
I don't know.
We were just talking about this yesterday. Did 17-year-old kids care that much about being recruited by Bill Belichick?
Changed my tune on that based on the only one person I could talk to that I felt like was an expert in that area.
And who's that?
My son.
Oh.
Who is by no means a Division I college prospect or anything, but he's a high school football player that wants to play in college, whatever. And I said, would you care? I said, if Dion, Dan Lanning, and Bill Belichick were, like, recruiting you, would his cachet carry value? And he said, absolutely. Now,
he's a New England kid, though.
That's what I said to him. Right? That's not fair.
Yeah. But it's true, though. It's true.
You know what he also said? Plus, that Carolina blue is so nice.
Carolina blue is pretty
nice. I feel
nice.
Like the uniforms could recruit as well as Bill could.
They probably could. I just, you know, you do wonder, though, does a 17-year-old in Galveston, Texas care as much about that?
I think that kid goes
down in Florida or whatever.
Yeah, it's a nice uniform. Hey, those are cool rings, old man. How much did you say? Was it $2 million? Was it $2.2 million? Oh, yeah, I'm on my way. And where am I going again? Just make sure the check gets to my mom and they cash it.
Yeah, very, very good. 617-779-7937. Joe's in Melrose. Hi, Joe.
Hey, guys. I actually think Belichick's going to work. I mean, the thing is, the college game has changed so much, and that's why Nick Saban, when he quit, he basically said that it's not about recruiting. When the Hueys did recruit and have people in their living room and invite the recruits over to his house, his wife said to him, why are you doing this? The only thing, two things that recruits care about now is how much you're going to pay me and what's my playing time. And so the thing is, smoozing like 17-year-olds and going to the mother's living room is done. You don't do that anymore. And the other thing is, it's like with the transfer portal, anyone can leave at any time. So basically, if you're projected to be a sixth-round pick or seventh-round pick, Belichick can come to you and say, look, you know, come play for me for 1 year. I'll improve your draft stock.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to work.
Thanks for the call, Joe. I think you might be onto something there because Belichick, even when he was a GM coach in the pros, wasn't running after the big shiny object, wasn't going after the five-star recruit, wasn't picking in, you know, the top five in the draft or trading into that or anything like that. He was more about value. He was more about molding someone into the player he wanted him to be. And he did that with a lot of different guys. Now, some of them may have been good no matter what. Brady may have been good no matter what. Gronkowski, Richard Seymour, guys like that may have been good no matter where they went and who they got drafted by, whatever. But there are players who owe a lot to Bill Belichick and the system and him coaching them up and sort of everything else. And I would imagine he'd be drawn to those type of players, especially in college. Right? Wouldn't you think so?
Yeah, and I don't know if you win that way.
I don't think you do
I
either.
Think you win with five-star blue chip. You get Shedeur Sanders. You get Travis Hunter. You get Quinn Ewers. You get these guys that are making a lot of money. But I don't know. I mean, he loved his middle class. Is he going to win because he has good special teamers at UNC? The Chris Boards of the world and these guys that he highlights, the Matthew Slaters? I doubt it. I still think you win with star players there. Something else just that came into my mind. So he, in the manifesto, he said he had this guy in mind to be his GM that would require a buyout.
Yes, mystery man.
Nick Saban?
No. Oh, wow.
If he retired from Alabama, technically he's probably still under contract to Alabama, correct?
He's still being paid by them, you think?
Wouldn't he be? I think if you retire, they own your. He had a long term deal.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what Nick Saban's status
because Nick Saban could recruit. Alabama had talent
for sure.
So if you tell me Nick Saban is picking the talent for North Carolina and Bill Belichick is coaching the talent, I just found a way that I could see this working.
Yeah, if they want to pay that much. I mean, if UNC wants to go that far,
right,
and they want to shell out an entire two different staff,
$30 million, and
one
and,
staff run by Bill, the other one by Nick, right, Saban. It just seems like a lot for UNC, doesn't it?
But how much do you want to win?
Well, and I don't know how much they want to
the
win.
Landscape.
Do they want to change? Is that something that they even care about?
Because it's probably, I saw the numbers recently, Texas, Ohio State, they were right just over $20 million in roster NIL money spent. Mm-hmm. So inflation, hey, North Carolina, you want to compete with the big boys. Are you willing to spend $25 million on your roster, $30 million on your roster? And the staff and Nick Saban, oh, I got to buy out Nick, sure, Saban. It's a healthy investment he's asking for.
Yeah, it certainly is. That's a good question. We'll ask that question to Adam Schefter, ESPN. He joins us next. WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arkin, Andy Hart, and we're joined on the phone right now by ESPN's Adam Schefter, who's brought to you by Liberty Bank and by Cullman. It's electric. Adam Schefter, how are we doing today, sir?
Christian, Andy, what's going on?
Oh, you know, just a normal day here in Boston, a big trade for the Red Sox, and of course this Bill Belichick news, which has everybody really wondering what it's going to take to get Bill down there to UNC. What's the latest on this right now? We saw some reporting from some of your colleagues over at ESPN. It sounds like they're at a bit of a stalemate right now.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I don't know that it's a stalemate so much as it's a process, and it's a complicated, layered process that they have to get through. I know everybody's saying he's agreed to become the coach, and he may wind up being the coach there. But I'm just telling you right now that there are a whole host of looming issues out there, including North Carolina's name, image, likeness resources, his salary, resources for the staff, reporting structure, flow chart, who he would report. Like, before this, I know everybody's in a rush to say he's taking the job, and he very well might. He very well might. But there are a lot of things that they have to get through. And there are things on the college side that it's not my normal beat, but the more calls I've made and the more people I've spoken to, they've got to get approval from the Board of Trustees to proceed to move ahead with Bill. And once the board signs off, then they have to go ahead with Bill and meet all the questions and desires he has. Like, it's a whole process. Is it underway? Absolutely. Is there mutual interest? Yes. Is it trending towards a deal? I think it is. Does that mean it's going to get done? No, not yet.
Just to rewind for a minute, Bill's interest in going to college and even UNC, does that stem from an idea that maybe there wasn't going to be a lot of NFL interest this offseason? Are those tied in? I mean, he only had the one opportunity, I guess, last year. Is that why he's looking at a wider range of opportunities?
Well, listen, we go back to last year. There was the opportunity with Atlanta that did not materialize. There were conversations with Washington at one point. Washington decided to go with Dan Quinn. So there were two potential opportunities that for various reasons did not materialize. Bill, at his core, is a coach, and he wants to coach. And if there were an opportunity that came along, even at the college level, then I think he absolutely would be open to it. And enthusiastic about doing it, and he would bring his ideas and his thoughts to the college game. But I, you know, listen, the NFL passed on him last offseason. He very well might get a job this offseason. I think he should, but I don't know what owners are thinking and how they're going to act. And with that being the case, if there were something that he was interested in, which this is one of those opportunities, then it's up to him to explore it and see if it can be put together the way he wants it to be put together. So, you know, you say that we don't know what the NFL owners are going to do this offseason. Well, we know what they did last offseason. And my guess is that I don't know how much confidence he has in them doing the right thing this offseason. They might not. We don't know. And he wants to coach. So if there's a coaching opportunity that makes sense, why not explore it, which is what he's doing right now.
What would you consider to be the biggest roadblock between getting this job? You listed a bunch of things, the likeness, the name, the money, the succession plan with his son, Steven, like all of that. If you had to guess, what would you say is probably the biggest thing?
I don't know.
Don't know.
I think the biggest thing is all the things. It all has to be a lot for him to go do this and to make it work. And until it's all aligned to his satisfaction, set up the way that he would want, with him answering to who he wants, with him having the money, and I don't mean salary, you know, name, image, likeness, to be able to pay out to players, to be able to make that school competitive. To everything is like, listen, I don't know this, but I'm sure he's spoken to Nick Saban about what it takes to run a successful college program at some point in time. There has to be some idea. Bill's not going to go into something blindly. He is very detailed, very thorough, very on top of things. So he's going to make sure that he takes every precaution to make sure everything that needs to be successful is in place, right? So that's the case. He's not going to do it.
So you bring up Nick Saban, and we do radio, so we throw a lot of crap out there we over sure the course do. Of 4 hours. There was a report that Bill has a name in mind to be his general manager at UNC, and it would require a buyout from somewhere else. Is there any chance that that general manager could be one Nick Saban?
I the first time I've heard of that. I mean, anything's possible, I guess. But why would Nick Saban want to go there? Anyway, I don't know that there may be something to that. I'm getting texts as we speak about all this stuff.
Is it from Nick?
But yeah. I don't know anything about that.
It's from Nick Saban saying, "Yeah, I'm actually going to go do it." I'm listening to your hit on WEEI right now, Adam, and I actually am going to go do that. Let's switch gears from one coach to another. There's reporting that's been going on this week in Boston about Gerard Mayo in these final 4 weeks here in New England. I know this isn't exactly pressing for the NFL or anything like that, but here in New England, we are curious about the future of Gerard Mayo and his standing with the Crafts. Is there a chance that he's coaching for his job here in this last month?
I don't see that right now. I think that. Well, let me say it this way. I think they intend to bring him back. I think that's their plan. Could the final month of the season deteriorate to a point where that gets called into question? In this league, anything's always possible. Do I think that they're thinking like that today, December 11th? No. I think that they think that they have their coach and they want to give him a chance to grow and build around him, and he'll be the guy. Again, every year there's something that changes and somebody gets put on blast that we weren't expecting, and maybe that'll be Gerard Mayo, but I'm not expecting that to be the case right now.
Adam, what is Josh McDaniel's reputation in the NFL right now, and do you think he will be in the mix for offensive coordinator's job? Do you think he'll be back in the league this year after taking a year off? Where does his status stand with the NFL?
Well, again, I think offensive coordinators are hard to find. And even if he did not make it as a head coach, Josh McDaniel still would be one of the top offensive coordinators. And I'm sure there will be people that are interested. The question is whether Josh would be interested. I think the Raiders still own 3 more years of money. He has children in school. Do you want to go uproot your family? These are things that he'll have to decide in time. But to me, there's always going to be a job for Josh McDaniels if he wants it. The question will be, what is that job, and does it interest him enough to do that when basically it would be for free anyway? Like, he could do that, but it's not like he's going to be – I don't think he'll be making money. I don't know if there's offset or not. I haven't checked that. But whatever the Raiders own, would he make the money? I have to check that. But neither here nor there. The money is really secondary. Does he want to do that? I guess it would depend on what the opportunity and situation was.
Adam, before we let you go, the Buffalo Bills added 10 non-controlling minority owners to the team's ownership group in a vote. I believe that happened today. And some of them are Vince Carter and Tracy McGrady, some of my favorite basketball players from my youth. Considering the type of contracts that are getting tossed around these days, you're seeing guys who played in the 90s and early 2000s becoming minority owners now. Is this a trend you think is going to continue and maybe even grow?
Well, I think what you saw today is there was the Bills, the Dolphins, the Eagles all like sold a portion of their team or limited interest in their team to private equity groups, investors. Like Jeffrey Lurie sold, I think, 8% of the Eagles. He's still the controlling owner. Nothing changes with him except he gets a check now for somewhere around $650 million. So someone's going to hand you a check and your job and ownership titles don't change at all. Why would you not do that? But that's part of the new league rules that they introduced that allow private equity to now invest in football ownership. So I think you're going to see more and more of this. It's like owners taking some money off the table because the franchises are so valuable.
coming down the home stretch here of the season, I think earlier this year when you were on with us, you estimated maybe 9 or 10 openings for head coaching jobs.
I guess it's 7 to 9. Okay. I'll stick to 7 to 9.
So you're still in that range? So you still think we'll have a boatload of sort of that Black Monday?
7 to 9. Well, we already have 3. We already have 3. So 7 would be my low number. And I would guess it's going to be right around 7 if I had to guess. 9 would be the high number if there are a couple of surprises we're not expecting. But if I had to give an over-under for the year, I would say 7 is the over-under.
That is the voice of Adam Schefter, ESPN Insider. Adam, thanks so much for the time. A big news day today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it, guys. Have a great week. We'll talk next Wednesday.
All right. Right back at you there. Adam Schefter, ESPN, joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. Quick break. When we return, we'll be joined by Celtics broadcaster Brian Scalabrine. That's next.